Ljusbacken den 21 augusti 81. Ruth Dennison, Damma Talk på kvällen.
So, let your concentration to breathing or sitting go a little and sit comfortably and listen to what we are going to speak about. If you do not understand a word, please raise your hand. Björn can translate. Okay. As you remember, we were calling this Vipassana meditation also a process which is cleansing, which is making pure our hearts and our minds. Cleansing or making it pure means that we do wake up to all unwholesome forces and in our mind, to all qualities, to all moods, to all feelings which are negative and harmful. My master said once to me, you know, Vipassana meditation is a constant fight against your evil forces. You understand? That evil, he means those mental states of mind, those forces within ourselves which are very negative and harmful. And there are five which we should know especially as our enemies or as not favorable mental forces within ourselves, or we should know them as mental states which are producing a great deal of harm for ourselves and others when we are not aware of them. The Buddha compared the mind to a lump of gold which is just come from the earth and which has to be purified first, what do you say, cleansed from other elements before the goldsmith can make nice things of it. Five different elements are there which have to be taken away. That is, I think, I always forget, sin, I call it, I don't know in American, in English, and copper, silver, iron, and something with this, it is melting when you put it in and makes nice figures. Tin. It's silvery.
Tin.
Tin. Tin. Yes. Tin and brass. And these are actually impure things. or impurities in that lump of gold. And when they have to be taken away before the goldsmiths can make nice golden chains and golden rings and whatever he wants to make out of gold. And in the same way is our mind. Before the mind can be formed to a very harmonious, nice, friendly, loving, compassionate instrument, he has to be cleared and purified from these impurities. Five are given. That is the mind which wants, which desires, which always reaches out and is never content or happy. It is the mind which can come and work through all our senses. The eyes look for more things, for more, desire nicer things. The ears hear beautiful sounds, more beautiful sounds, more records, more tapes to hear, always striving to live, to feel good, and always grasping and wanting through the nose. Even if we don't want that smell, it's a desire. If I want it, it's a desire too. It's that mental force which wants, the desiring mind, I call it sometimes. Think of the tongue, which is a sense organ. How much that instrument, that sense organ, likes and wants and desires. And then we have another sense organ, which is most greedy, which is the one of the mind, a mental sense organ. As the eye sees things, so the mind produces thoughts, fantasies, ideas. How don't we know that? We sit 10 minutes, half an hour in a meditation, and here the mind is wanting, fantasies, ideas, planning, organizing. Constantly is the mind wanting things to think and to do in the mind. Very powerful striving. Then we have a body organ. All through the body we can feel, and we constantly desire a good feeling in and outside. We don't have, we feel lonely, we desire constantly. And that is one of these five enemies. One of these five impurities which have to be removed from the mind. Now that is too much. It doesn't get removed till we would be the first degree of enlightenment. But we can talk about dusting them off, or reducing their force, or weakening their fire. I begin to, and how do I do that? The most powerful a tool for that is we become aware. We are beginning to feel and to observe and to beginning to notice that this is the wanting mind pushing me into all direction outside of me, making my mind impure and impossible for what? For meditation. But it is really also influencing my ordinary life at home very negatively when I am obsessed or possessed by the wanting mind. I cannot do 10 minutes anything when a new desire is coming in. And I have just worked very hard to fulfill this desire, and here is another one. It's always rising up again. Why? Because it is the nature of the desire not to be satisfied. That is why people can never stop in getting more and more and richer, or like to drink and drink more and drink more, or like smoke, they smoke and they like more and they like more. When they don't have any discipline to stop the desiring mind. And it is, or to weaken, let me say, the desiring mind. You see, that is like if you have a fire in the fireplace and the fire is burning, also very greedy, you can feed it and you can feed it and you can feed it with wood or whatever to burn. So if you feed it to a certain degree, the room gets warm. If you don't stop that, and if you follow to feed it more, to give it more, as it would like to have, it would like to burn, you can burn up the house with it. So what is initially kind of promising and good can turn into very great harm and destruction. In the same way for us, our desires, they feel in the beginning like they satisfy us and they make us quiet and they make us content, maybe, but not long. It comes up with another one and with another one. Before we know, this is a habit and a compulsion, and then it becomes destructive to ourselves. So it is very important, says the Buddha, and we really know it for ourselves if we really begin to look at this, and to compare your own life, or to think of your own life, how much we really suffer because of our desires. So the Buddha said we should awake to this force within ourselves. We should weaken its passion and its fire, and should become gradually more moderate with our desires, more modest, and begin then to differentiate or to distinguish. Is that a desire I really need to fulfill? Do I need it? Or can I if I don't have a good answer, I should say, I don't need it. I should give in and give up. So in that way, we are weakening the desiring force and strengthen the pure force within our mind. But we have to be very determined for that. And we have to recognize each time a desire is rising, we have to name it desire or greed. You sit in the meditation, the desire comes, you want to get up and you want to walk now. It's too long. For any reason you see a desire coming up and you let it be in your consciousness. You name it even. And by not reacting to it, by having the courage and the strength to let it be as it arises, it will loosen its force. That is so very hard to believe, because we are trained in the wrong way and have made a habit out of it, that when a desire comes, we shall satisfy it. Now that means, you know, not all. There are some desires which are very important for us to fulfill, to go to the toilet, to eat, to drink, to feed my baby. These are desires, but they are more those two desires which are the necessity to maintenance of our body. So we begin to understand the difference. And here in meditation, where everything is supplied and we really don't need anything outside of what is given here, it's very easy to understand what is desire and what is need. And you will see that they are rising constantly. They are not invited, and yet they come, like the thoughts. But most of the thoughts are desires. So we have to become aware of this force within ourselves. If we don't, the desiring mind becomes very strong and turns against us and rules us and dominates us. And we have, like a little dog on the leash, to follow the desires. And that brings us into a great dissatisfaction and into great unrest and discontent. The second great enemy is great mental force, which disturbs not our meditation alone, but also our daily life unfolding, that is that of hate. To hate belong all forms of not wanting. And that is that force in ourselves which pushes the world away. I don't want to come to the discourse tonight. That is hateful mind, form of hate, of not wanting, of pushing away. The opposite of wanting. These two forces, desire and hate, are putting the world in fire or on fire and in flames. And if we do not become aware of these forces within ourselves, we are just a play ball on this fire in us. We burn with hate and not wanting, and we are aflame in desires. So what to do with that? Have you thought about it? Who had those friends during the day who noticed that fire in your heart? Honest, all your hands up, everyone. Very honest, see? Everyone. No one can speak oneself free from it. It is when we are not trained in our mind and are strong in attention to breathing or in attention to the position or standing or sitting, whatever I do, these forces come in right away. They are weakening us. They are want to make disharmony in you. So, how to deal with it? What did you do today? How did it go away? One, number one is, we should see these forces, this negative force, as a not as the real me, not as a real belonging to my great nature, to my Buddha nature, belonging to my awakened mind. It is not me, not identifying with it. It is a force which comes in because my attentiveness is not strong, because I'm absent-minded somewhere. And of course, if you think we have a reason to be angry with somebody, or you think somebody did you wrong, but it is really not so true. The hating force has nothing to do with the outside world. It is coming in you as a reaction to it. So how to deal with hate? Number one is, as I said, to see it not as yourself, but to see it as an impersonal force arising in you, which is out to color your consciousness, which is out to disturb you, to confuse you, to make you upset, to lose your calm and your quiet and your balance. If you can see that, then you will say, aha, here is my friend hate. I will not identify with you. You are a mental factor. You are not my real self. I just let you stay here because I know you are also subject to change. Soon you will go. And then you have make victory. Another good way of dealing with hate is when you feel that is mostly hate is directed toward another person or another, which is a friend or a brother or a sister or a mother or a father, or whatever, a teacher or community member. You must then turn around and must open your heart and must say, may you be forgiven, may you be happy, may you not be angry with others. May you be peaceful. Send loving thoughts. Because when you continue being angry with that person, he doesn't know that. You don't even harm him unless you go over and do this. But we don't do that. We gruel in our minds with it, you see. And what we do by that, we make our minds morbid and sick with it, upset, angry, negative. But when you can turn around and say, the poor brother didn't know better, I forgive him, may he be happy. You are changing, not him. Maybe he feels your vibrations when you come closer to him. Maybe he thinks of you. But what you're changing really is your consciousness. from a negative, constricted consciousness, you open up your heart. And that can change a great deal in you. And stops your enclosure, your constrictedness, your tightness. And you may open up, you will have attention again, and you continue meditating. You can keep attention to your breathing, to your life rhythm, to your standing or lying down, whatever. And you are purer. You have taken out that impurity, hate of your beautiful being, which is gold. You took that impure metal out. See? Yeah, please.
Is it good to be egocentric?
What
else? You're very egoistic if you just say that you're going to purify yourself, but not the other person who feels very bad, who are very angry.
Yeah, darling, but you cannot purify the other person. When you purify your own heart, I was just talking about it, you are turning the heart which was hating into loving thoughts.
That
is not egotistic. With a loving heart, you can be very good to other people.
Yeah, but other people to me.
Yes, but... how do you mean other people to you?
If someone hits me,
yeah,
of course I get angry and tell the person that it hurts me.
Yes, so what can you do about that? You can spit back, you can hit him back, you can take a stick and do the same back. You think that will help? Maybe it will. Try.
No.
You see? It wouldn't. That brings more reaction again. Someone has to stop. And what this means about what we are talking is we are stopping the force of hate and not wanting within our mind, within our heart, or trying to weaken that fire. And that is only sounding egotistic, because we think of ourselves. But when you live together with somebody, he would or she would say something else, because the minute you are weakening your force of hate, the one who lives with you will benefit. You see? That's for the benefit of others too. It only sounds egotistic, but it is really an open force. Of course, darling, if somebody hits you very bad and you have a chance to stop him and to dig away or stop him and to make him realize what he's doing, then you do that. But if you do it with an angry heart, that's different than when you do it with a courage heart and with an open heart and say, look, my dear friend, you are doing wrong now. Wake up. You see? But not with an angry heart. With an understanding, open heart. You see that he is obsessed and possessed by anger. He cannot do otherwise. He has not the understanding what is going on in him or in her. So she would be very upset and confused. But when we are beginning now to understand this is a very impersonal force coming here in my mind. It's impurity coming out because I'm having not purified all these forces within me. Then I can deal quite differently with situations in life. Who understands? Mm-hmm. Leif? Yeah. So, that is very important to see that. And another thing helps, which also helps for the force of desiring mind, is to have good friends around you, Sangha friends, very good people, and to live also with good people, and to protect yourself from places where there is very bad and evil things going on. Look at you and you sparkle. You came here because you know here are good free people living, good friends. You feel protected. You feel in a community. You know nobody will take it and will be very violent to you. We all are still angry. We all have the fire within us. But at the same time, you all are trying to weaken this force in you and to purify yourself. And your way of life is turning that way. That's different than with people who are not knowing about it and just making more karma or more bad actions. Is that clear, Björn?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was number two. Number three, enemy or number three impurity in our mind is the force which is very heavy, which doesn't want in a way, which pulls us down, which stops us from doing anything. Not only in meditation is it dangerous and hindering, but it is also equally hindering in our daily life. That is the force of sloth and torpor, which means heavy, lazy, not wanting to do, energies which don't want to make the beginning in body, and also the lazy energies within our mind. And we should realize that if we have these energies running us and within ourselves, then nothing gets done. Either cleaning up on the earth, on the worldly level, or starting to meditate and concentrate, which is more on the spiritual level. We are just not able to do and to turn to action if we have this force very heavy in us. Then we will be tending only, if this force is strong, we will tend to follow only and to make only effort when it comes what we really like, what I desire, what gives me pleasure. But we don't do things which are kind of not so pleasant, like cleaning up, maybe, the red house, the first floor, or cleaning up somewhere else, or helping my friend. Something what is not pleasant, we would not do. We let ourselves then determine only by desire. So we should be very alert to this force in ourselves. Lazy? No. Look around, what has to be done? Get up and do it. Lazy in my mind? Heavy? What's that? Means I don't want. Oh, I don't give anything for it. Oh, okay. What is that? You look at it. You know this force can conquer us and nothing. We never get to know ourselves. We never get to know the source of our suffering. So, I see that in meditation, up. I'm tired, I get up, stand, or move. Have you seen us doing it? I constantly inspire you to get over that. Did you notice it? In the middle of our meditation, we do some movement, something else than just sitting, some other form. Why? Because I want to get you out of that inertia to help you, and that you can learn how to do it for yourself, not to get stuck, and not to identify with that force. That's not you. Just laziness and heaviness arising because here lots of things arising every minute, many types of consciousness arising, many types of feelings and moods and mental things are coming up. So this is arising in the process, because I'm living process, and not yet awakened in my mind to all what is here. So it arises and wants its functioning. When laziness arises, it wants place, it wants lots of expansion. Mrs. Laziness wants to live in me. She wants great deal of space, so she penetrates us and we are getting tired, you see. And so in the mind, we call Mr. Lazy, Mr. Cloudiness. Well, when it arises, it didn't come invited. It came, but it came with a desire too. It wants to live. And it will live when we are not recognizing it, and when we are identifying with it, then lazy in body and mind, nothing gets done. Just the most important things we get somehow together, but there's no freshness and no awareness on it. Or we don't understand, and we think it's just my nature, maybe. Or we think because somebody else did something to us, that's the way I am now. No. Recognize it. Then we don't give expansion to the arising mental factor. Recognizing it is a number one way and tool to deal with this. And then there are other helps with respect to our meditation. You feel very tired. Well, you get up. Stand up. You have seen how we do that, but there are other ways. Stand up. Go to the cold shower. Let it wriggle around, down. It freshes you up. If that doesn't work, you may go on the chimney and sit on the edge. That will keep you awake too. When it becomes dangerous behind ourselves, that keeps us on our toes. And, that's an extreme suggestion. I took it because a teacher in Thailand, to one Vipassana teacher at that time, who was a student, asked Master, I am so tired all the time. I can't get over it. Oh, he said, it doesn't matter. It's not so important. It's just very easily overdone. You see that well over there? You see? Please go over there. Sit free, float, free hanging on the edge and look down all the time into the depths of the well. That will help. So, we can do a few things. Also to talk to good friends, to Dharma friends, and to have friends who understand and who can inspire you, or read also the Dharma. To understand the Dharma is also very, very good help for this. Then the number four enemy is the opposite force of inertia. Is that what is not heavy, what is not lazy, but it is, this force is so busy and so in motion and in action that it is nothing but chaos and excitement and restlessness and agitation. Who did have that friend not yet visit? Who remembers during this today who felt restless, agitated, and not deciding to leave or to stay? It's also the faculty in our mind which cannot make a decision, which is constantly back and forth here and there, like having your feet in two canoes, each foot in one canoe, and see yourself going over the lake. You never have rest. You see? You never know where you belong to. The agitation, the restlessness, is that force in our mind which is ready, because it is so alive and cannot stay anywhere and wants to do everything at the same time. It is that force which is ready to jump to any kind of mischief, or to any kind of what promises the mind something nice. We don't have any patience in our mind to think about it, what a result it would have. We just grab it. Very destructive force, a very powerful negative force. That's why my teacher called it evil force, and made it very clear that meditation is in the service of weakening in the beginning these evil forces within ourselves, that you can spend your lifetime in this open confrontation with yourself and these arising forces till they come to quiet, till they maybe become uprooted. When you have uprooted the last, you have become what is called first degree enlightened one, or Sotapanna. That is the force which is doubt. That is that force which makes us suspicious and turns away and lets us go back, and is very negative over there and doesn't give any trust and confidence. It closes up and constricts ourselves, and it doesn't let any openness here. It's not an open force, it is closing. And when it is in us, it can stop our meditation. It's a very powerful negative force. It can stop us to do anything when there is doubt. Now you may ask, well, Shall I never doubt? Shall I always accept everything? No. A certain amount of doubt is actually is a sign that you are careful, that you are considering. But then I wouldn't call it quite doubt, but I would call it the force of consideration. I am not quite sure. I have not that real confidence for that. But it isn't, we are talking here, when we talk about doubt, the force which makes it very negative and doesn't allow any chance anymore. And that is a very, why am I here? I thought I should be, I have come for enlightenment. All I hear, so I have to lift my leg. I have to sit quiet. I can't talk. That is bringing me enlightenment. You see, that can stop us. And many have stopped themselves through this kind of doubt. They have even left the course. Not understanding, of course, why it is necessary to discipline ourselves in such a way. So to overcome doubt is in a way important. Know whether you are doubting and very negative, or you are just considering. And also, you give space for the possibility, when you have doubt, that you don't really know. So it is natural to have doubt. But you look at the doubt and you see it as doubt, then it is, where are you going? Could you stay a few minutes till I'm finished? We are already finished in a short while. I think this kind of talk is very important for everybody. I know it's getting uncomfortable in our hearts. To talk about the negative things within ourselves is not pleasant. And especially for those who come in, like you are a guest here, and you haven't had, you know, the training we have already going. But be assured, dear friend, it's very important for all of us to know of these forces within our heart and within our mind. I think you are a friend of people. I think you are a friend of human beings. And I do feel you are definitely a friend of nature and of animal life, of plant life. And to hear about these negative forces within ourselves can bring us to deeper understanding why the world is so bad, from which we turn away and find our place here. That will help you open your heart to love and to more effort, perhaps, or more love, to overcome in you these forces and to help others. Read the newspaper. Look around. Why do we have the world we have? These forces are there. We are lazy, so we want to have it from someone else. So we steal. So we do something to get something for nothing. And it is then soon a crime. I have doubt, and I cannot overcome it. Maybe doubt that my friend is not faithful. I am emotional. I made a lot of violent things against her or him. The world, the newspapers are full of this type of action. These five forces are not only disturbing us meditators, but disturbing the whole world. Imagine we had them all weekend and brought them into balance, to a normality. how much less suffering would be in the world. You see? Very, very interesting to think about it. That would be the right contemplation when you are sitting in meditation or under the tree or in the grass and become aware of our own desires, our own negativities, and be friendly with them too. That would be a great achievement of us. And I only can invite you again and again to do that. It's not uprooted in one time hearing them. It is not uprooted in us in 10-day course. It needs a very long time of training the mind to lose these negativities. Then, whatever your faith is, you may not like it, you may not be a Buddhist, but you may be a Christian. Then you may say, then God can come to us, or can fill my heart, if there are some who don't understand the language, the Buddha. It concerns us all nowadays. You see, we don't like that the birches here in the forests get sprayed and poisoned by airplanes and killed. It only comes because people don't have that love for nature. Also it comes, people are very greedy. See? How to do that? To understand at least, and you might come into contact with people like that, and we may be able to maybe communicate on that level. Otherwise it doesn't work. You cannot campaign for that. Purifying your heart, making weak your unwholesome or evil forces within ourselves, is a very personal job. You can do it if you like to. If not, do what you like. But be aware that it has a lot of suffering as its result. But if we work with these forces within ourselves, we not only purify our heart, we open our heart, we have a freer heart, and we can embrace the world and help it too. So with regard to all these five hindrances for my meditation and for my life, the Tibetans have a very nice saying about it, and I'd like you to keep to remember it. You see your mind as a blue sky. On the blue sky, there are coming clouds. Heavy clouds, rain clouds, light clouds, cumulus clouds. The sun is coming there. The moon arises. The stars arise there. But they all don't stay there. They move. They are just temporarily moving on, coming and going, but what remains is a blue sky. In the same way, your mind, fundamentally the open, loving mind, the clear mind, but at the time, lots of phenomena arising, doubt, desire, indulgence, hate, anger, despair, laziness, in the mind, in the body, restlessness, all this is arising. But they all come and go. like the clouds on the sky. And when they leave, and when they pass by, have passed away, then there is a moment where there is blue or openness on in my heart, or love, or harmony. But it cannot happen when these are in action and penetrating my mind and my body. Well, I think with this I wanted to close. It's enough for tonight. I only hope that you really understood what we talked about it, and you begin to touch at least students of Vipassana who heard it already last year, or maybe the year before, begin to understand the importance of being able to become friend and open with your own hindering forces. And in that openness and in that accepting and friendliness to them, they become weak, because you begin to understand and to know what is happening here. So I only hope that you understood it so much and so good or sufficient enough that you can begin or continue to confront these negative hindering forces in you, and you begin to look at them and to allow them and to hold them in your attention without needing to do anything about it or without needing to follow them. So that you can participate very alive during your life, during your living and during your unfolding in this process of weakening the negative forces within ourselves. May you all be very successful, and in that way reduce your own suffering and that of other beings. Thank you. If there is a question, I'd like to answer it. If you have some question, like Shasta did before. That was a very good question, she said. She asked. Yeah? Any question? Richard? No. Is it clear? You know, sometimes it is like this. When one understands, there is nothing to say. You have to say, yes, it is so. You see? All I can hope is, may I be able to work in myself with it, to accept it, and become strong in my mind. And not just be upset when I am finding myself being lazy. There is a nice story. Well, it's not really a story. In the Christian tradition. I don't know, I think some priest says to the disciple, well, be quiet and be good. God, something bad he did and he confessed, and then he said, oh, don't worry, God will forgive you now. He has lots of love and you will be forgiven. And then he said, yes, but how do I know that he forgives me? Oh, he said, very easy, darling. You just don't do it again. You see? That means you become strong, your mind is pure, you don't need to do it anymore. You can say, God helps me not to do it. It's just the way you look at it and you understand. Everything depends on understanding. So don't do it again. You see, I feel guilty because I was lazy this morning and I didn't appear to meditation, or I didn't appear to milk the cows, or whatever you did. Well, don't do it again. Do it next time right. If you forget, write down, make a big sign. You know, don't forget to get up, or don't forget to clean up. These are all helps in ourselves. We have to really realize, dear friends, many things we have to do alone in this life. And one of those many things is working and reducing our karmic impure forces. You see, some have different karmic forces than others. Some are not so angry all the time. Some don't have constantly desire to drink and to be violent and so on. Some are not. Some have more, maybe, doubt. Some have less doubt. We have all different degrees of these forces in us. But the thing is to recognize them and to reduce them from where you are. And if you feel you have less anger in you, less negative nastiness than others, you help. You be a good friend. You say, look, this is really not right. You create more suffering for yourself. You understand, in an understanding way, you help. Because he has a more, say, that person or that has a different karma. That means from another life he brought so many impurities with him. Now he has to work with that. And others have had not so heavy karma with them. Maybe more light karma. They are more lighter. They love to to be diligent. They are not anymore so ruled by desires which are turning to be very destructive. So we have to see that. But to recognize that we have to do it by ourselves. It's a little bit help sometimes, but even the help is only happening because you then want it. And your heart is open for that. So we still have to do it. No one can take out your angry heart. No one can take out your destructive desires. Or your jealousy, or a doubt. Jealousy is also a form of the second enemy. Yes, dear.
Are you enlightened? Have you got the enlightenment?
What would that help you if I would say yes? Take me as I am. Listen whether you can do something with that arm, whether it sounds good to you. Whether I am enlightened or not has no value to you. It has value to me, but not to you. I can share my insight and my light or love from my mind with you, but whether that is enlightened or not, it wouldn't be any different. You see, so we just see, listen and feel it and see, is it all right what I said? Does it make sense? Is it so? And then take it. If it is really good, then use it. But to make this question and to make a person to bring it to ask for a certain requirement, it doesn't really help. to you. What, darling?
It was not me. I can't be enlightened because you are. It was just a
question. Yeah. Oh yes, it's fine. The question is wonderful. It's a great question. But I also had a question to you.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and we just talk about it. And I also told you my answer about your question.
Mm-hmm.
And I do say either not yes or no. Because I'm not in the position to do that. But I am in the position to invite you to many insights which I can share with you. It's like somebody has gone to the top of the mountain and comes down and you ask, how does it look there? You see? And if he can tell you exactly how it was and it sounds good to you because it sounds good, then you say, sounds all right. She has been there. I have no doubt. Someone who has not been there and tells you a lot of things which are so obvious that it is just not true, you have doubt and say, well, doesn't sound right. You see? You can for yourself decide whether we are talking here and sitting, and when we are sit and meditate, and how we are helping each other and exchanging and communicating. And if it doesn't feel right, and it is really feeling totally upset, well then you have the choice to kind of say, well, it's not right. You don't. But when you can go, but when you are really not, cannot say that, and you say, yeah, it's really true. Sure is like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yes, it's true. I really sense all that. My breath, my rhythm of life. I'm really close to it and I see how it changes. I get born and dies out. Yeah, it's true what you said, you see. Then you say, oh yeah, I can experience it. It's so. And then gradually you will find out for yourself whether that mind which invites you constantly to your own self-exploration knows well his journey or her journey or not. And whether you call that enlightened or not, that's you can. It's okay. Or awakened. So there are also degrees of enlightenment. See, some which are very never changing anymore. And then there are enlightenments where you still change. Sometimes it's very clear, like your attention, sometimes very clear and good. Next minute, it changes and it's not so good. That first degree of enlightenment changes a little still. It can become an enlightenment each time you are concentrating deeply and attending attentively, and you can have an insight and say, "Ah, yeah, never thought of it. It's right." Who had experiences like that? Mm-hmm. Where you realize something, it's true. You see, that is then the mind which awakes. And which has clear sight and has a good insight. And that is the mind then which is free from greed and anger and sloth and torpor, restlessness and doubt or jealousy. And wonderful. Feels good. See? You recognize something of life. And you're free from this. Each time you do it, you are free. You have a temporary enlightenment that can be on your level too. Mm-hmm. And the deeper ones, and then never the change. Wait, did you like that? Justin? Does it make sense? Little bit. Takes time till we really understand. I remember that I talked last year about this. But they were very vague already, yeah? Now they come back in your consciousness.
That made very much sense, what you said about enlightenment was, I feel more unsure about.
You weren't sure?
No, I was feeling that I didn't understand that.
Uh-huh. Did that make better now? You understand a little bit more what I said? Little, yeah. When I asked you, I didn't think so much of that. I asked you with reference to the five hindrances.
Yes.
That you understand a little better, you see. That is with us, you see. That we experience every day, these friends. They come to us all the time. We are more secure in that. We understand that better. But the pure mind, the moments of enlightenment or insight into our nature, they're not so often yet, so we're not so secure in that domain, you see. And that is harder than to understand. So, that was a question that led us long ways. That was that question. Another one? Another question? No? And would you tell me your name in the back?
Sven.
I see, Sven. You are the student of physics, yeah?
Chemistry.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, did you enjoy staying here?
Yeah, very much.
See? It is just sometimes a temporary impatience which goes, which lets you go. I really would have liked you to stay, Sven. A brilliant mind like yours should know about these things, to understand not only chemistry, but real life. Very important. You see, the scientists, if they would know better, more about the life as it really is, they would not throw so much stuff of physics and atoms and neutrons power into the world for minds which cannot use it rightly and misuse it. For greed, out of hate, making war with it, out of greed they use it in other ways. So the world gets constantly exploited because also scientists have not learned deeply about the real nastiness in men or the real basic forces, the unconscious forces which are governing us when we are not awakening us, in us. So they do wonderful things, they invent great things, and other minds come and use it, everyone, for their own purpose. Out of hate, out of greed, out of laziness, they create stuff which we don't use. They create so much stuff for us, we don't need to do anything anymore. The next will be, they will give us pre-chewed food. Don't need to do anything. This is crazy. Well, you know that, don't you, Swain?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Become a scientist with deep knowledge of yourself, with knowledge of the human being, especially with these forces of unconscious, in which are not conscious of us, which govern us in the emotion, on the emotional level. Well, did you all take that on?
Yes.
when burn, burn. Now are you satisfied? What you got on your tape now, you think?
Yeah,
can be useful?
Yes, very useful. To repeat sometimes.
Maybe for a group of other people even, you know? Very good. Like, I don't know, green wave people. Very important, you see. We become all very attached to what we think we just got new. You know, just growing vegetables. Just being a physician. Or just being physics. Or just eating health food. Just one thing. But we don't, we're so hard attempting to open up to the all forces in ourselves, to the entire human being, so that we begin to understand how this works together. It's a machine here, working in interaction constantly, and the world pushes buttons for us. There's something happening. We go, see? Button is pushed here. Something outside, always pushing the button. Someone coming groovy and very angry. Well, why are you angry with me? We already react, you see. Because there, that angry being has pushed the button. We are like a machine. But when you begin to awake to your capacity of the mind, which can recognize what is happening here. You are angry, you know. You walk, you know. You are jealous, you exactly know that the jealous mind is making a jealous consciousness and is trying to get you into some other trouble. You know what jealousy has all done. And read and so on. So then you are on the great path of human unfolding where you begin to awake, where you are stopping and weakening to begin these unconscious, unwholesome forces which are the source of a lot of suffering. So that's why we practice attention. That's why I inspire you constantly to wake up and to make the mind strong. Attention, I'm standing, I'm lifting the wood. I am angry. I'm listening. I'm bending down. And in the attention to your breathing, to your very basic functioning of life, there you really learn this capacity. And you make the mind strong, open, loving, and pure. Two thousand 500 years since the Buddha's teaching, these things have been tried to overcome and to become less in our minds. And look how much still is there. The Buddha said, to overcome your own enemies within your own heart, within your mind is more difficult than to besiege or to conquer an army of 1,000 people who would singly come and challenge you with their sword, and you could easier fight against these 1,000 enemies and conquer them than against these 5. hindrances in yourself. So there is something very deep to consider here, and to have deeper thoughts about it. It's not so easy. In fact, it's not so easy to be a human being, to live life open and loving and embracing and harmonious. Not so easy. It is much easier to be slumpy and lazy and desiring and angry and doubting, restless. Much easier, because that is kind of our impulses. So I don't know why that is so. I think someone knew more. Someone wanted to give us a job to do besides gathering food for eating and having a good bed to sleep, good roof and good friends. We also shall work with this, what we are. It's our job. So be happy, even with your enemy, even with all the misery. Just accept as we are and let your mind grow strong in attention and accepting yourself and in understanding. That's why we meet here. I can see that you like to sit here and I continue talking. I already said twice it's enough. See? You are greedy for listening and I'm greedy for talking. So now we will stop. I will give you a nice bath and I think we all walk out for a short while. We have 15 minutes for walking and then we come back and we sit half an hour and then it's the evening gone. And with that we have the second day done. Isn't that fast? Don't you think? No? I think it is fast. Be courageous and say yes, it's fine. It is, Gerd?
Yeah.
Yeah, even with your misery, huh? It's fast. Well, wonderful. It is fast. It's very fast. Good. So please go and walk out into the quiet of the evening and contemplate a little on this. How's the little monster?
He's sleeping.
Good. He went to sleep. Wonderful.